So that's the real story? Yes. Believe it or not, I don't care, but you wanted the truth and you got the truth. Dex can confirm what I said. But you said Dex never saw this Rodney guy, Roddy, and he did. He just wasn't manhandled by him. I don't know what to say. She got up and started pacing. Well, you don't have to say anything. She appeared to think that over for a few beats before a curious look came over her face. She asked, "Do you remember when we were really young, or I was really young anyway, and you were like 10 or something, and we would go to the ski cottage every winter?" I did, vaguely. There were a few years where we went skiing in the mountains every winter, though I didn't know what that had to do with anything. "Do you remember the room we slept in?" Again, vaguely. A small, stereotypical cabin room with bunk beds and its own ensuite. I remembered the smell of the fireplace at night and the smell of melting snow on the windowsill come morning, but nothing else. "Kind of," I said slowly. "Do you remember some boy you called Sam who would come and visit you?" The name rang a bell. I tried to think back, but was bombarded with images from a million vacations and a million boys who could have been called Sam. I had one image, though, of a young boy white as the snow outside the window, but it was so hazy and fleeting that it could have been a dream. "Sam," she continued, "would come every night and knock on our window. I would wake up and find you at the window trying to open it. I remember I would ask what you were doing, and you would say, 'Sam's here. I have to let him inside. He's cold.'" The memory started to pour back into my eyes. I saw Sam's sweet, impish face at the window, looking so small and so cold. He must have been around 8 years old, but tiny for his age. I remembered I would open the window and invite him inside, but he would never come. He said he had to stay outside because his mother was mad at him. I remembered it now, the sharp cold as it came through the window and kissed my feet, the frost that gathered on his eyelashes like fairy dust. "Yes, I remember," I told her. Her face grew grim, which quickened my pulse instinctively. "What about it?" "I never saw Sam," she said carefully. "And I was on the top bunk, too. And I remember you would get up every night, always at 1 a.m., and you would creep over to the window and open it. You would talk to yourself for who knows how long, then you would close the window, look up at me, and say, 'Sam had to leave.' But there was never anyone there, Perry." I stared at her dumbly while processing this insane piece of information. I had a bad memory, and that happened a long time ago, but now that she brought it up, I remembered it all as clear as day. I mean, I knew I had imaginary friends when I was wee, but there clearly was a boy named Sam, right? "Was I sleepwalking?" I asked. "Maybe I dreamed the whole thing." "I don't think so," Ada said. "You often talked about him in the day, too, wondering why his mother would lock him out of the cabin. You even told Mom once that you wanted to invite him over for dinner one time. They said sure, thinking he was some kid who hung around. But I never saw him come over for dinner, and I never saw him at your window." "How do you remember all of this? You must have been like 5 years old." "I remember it because it scared me, Perry. You scared me. I started thinking my older sister was crazy." "Crazy," I repeated. I closed my eyes and pressed my hands against my temple. I was too tired to deal with this. This was just an extra scooping of ridiculous on top of a growing pile of insanity. Ada put her hand on my arm. "You're not crazy." "Right," I muttered and sat down at my desk. I feared this would make me rethink everything.
"I mean it, for reals. I think you saw Sam, even if I didn't see him, and I think you saw this old Roddy guy, too. I believe you, Perry."
I gave her a half-hearted smile.
"I'm serious. Maybe you could appreciate that," she snarled.
I sighed and leaned back in my chair. "I do appreciate it, Ada. Calm down. This is just a lot to take. I mean, what does it all mean?
It means maybe you're meant to see these things. Maybe if you think back over the years, you'll remember some of the other stuff, too."
That didn't sound like a very good idea at all. "Other stuff? Was there something else?" She tilted her head thoughtfully.
"Maybe. You acted weird pretty much throughout all of high school."
"That was the drugs,"
I told her bitterly. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. You know, it wasn't very fun for me growing up, having you as a sister.
Ouch. I'm sorry, I said, hoping she would see how much I meant it. I'm so happy you didn't turn out like me.
There's still time, she exclaimed wryly. It doesn't matter anyway. I know it was harder for you than it was for me.
Really, I am so sorry.
I have no excuse. I don't want to hear it. What's done is done, okay? It doesn't matter.
She started to head for the door.
Wait, I called out after her, not wanting her to leave me alone with the bomb she just dropped. I've got things to blog about, don't you?
I shrugged helplessly. I don't know.
You know you do. Screw everyone. Write what happened anyway. And if no one believes you, it doesn't matter because I believe you. This Dex dude believes you, and people believe what you tell them to believe. It's just like fashion. They'll wear what you tell them to wear.
How come I wasn't that smart when I was 15?
Oh, right. The drugs.
What a waste.
Oh, and congrats on your new job, she added before leaving the room.
Right. The new job.
Sam, old Roddy, Dex, blogging, training a receptionist. My sore head.
It was time for bed.
Good afternoon, Allingham and Associates. Melody speaking.
Melody, our future receptionist, picked up the phone and answered in an overly saccharine voice. I was leaning against the wall and watching her as she did her first trial run of phone answering. I had been training her all morning with the basic logistics of the job, even though she had done the job in my absence last week without any trouble. Still, I found it mildly entertaining to stand back and watch as the torch was passed down. Entertaining and extremely relieving. See, whereas I did not make a good receptionist, Melody did. She was bubbly, amiable, and focused. Though it might have been all for show, most people tried their hardest the first day on the job. Something about her screamed receptionist. It could have been she was cute, tanned, and blonde, with the whitest teeth I had ever seen north of California. Or her enthusiasm and immediate organizational skills. She filled all the staplers on her morning break, you know, for fun. Or it could have been that she seemed genuinely interested in helping people, unlike me, who believed a dull stare was just as effective. As I watched her take over my old job, I realized how happy I was to be going on to a new position. It was scary, of course, taking on new responsibilities. The more I thought about it, the more I worried I wouldn't be good enough. On the other hand, maybe I could rise to the occasion, do a great job, and once and for all put all my laziness, procrastination, and overall apathy behind me. I could be a new person. I might surprise myself. That didn't mean I didn't think about Dex during random times of the day, though. I still hadn't heard a peep from him. I considered texting him or Facebook messaging him, something very low-key and casual, but I didn't want to come across as desperate. You didn't call someone back right away after a date. It was the same kind of thing. It's stupid how I kept on comparing our adventure to a date when it was very much the opposite. We weren't even work partners, for crying out loud, and I started to doubt that would ever happen. But I couldn't help it. It felt like I was in some semi-relationship with him, which made me feel even more stupid. This is how stalkers get started. I shook my head and let out a disgusted sigh.
Did I do something wrong?
Melody was looking at me inquisitively, phone to her ear. I must have drifted off in my head, as usual. I shot her a quick smile and answered truthfully, "No, you are doing just fine." I, on the other hand, was not. My mind continued to be torn between getting excited about the new position and feeling disappointed at the lack of one was shown it. And it didn't improve as the day went on, either. As soon as I got home, my mother whisked me off for a little shopping spree. Now, I know that a shopping spree sounds like a lot of fun, and I know Ada rightfully gave me daggers when my mother hustled me out the door, but this wasn't supposed to be an enjoyable experience. My mother usually takes me out on one of these excursions because A, she has bad news and wants to sweeten it up somehow, or B, she wants to go all Eliza Doolittle on my ass. I suspected this trip fell into the latter. So, what's the deal, Mom? I asked as she gingerly pulled the car into the narrow mall parking spot for the umpteenth time. Is there enough room to get out? She asked, looking over at my side. There wasn't, unless she was imagining I was 30 pounds lighter. But instead of prompting another attempt at parking and perhaps a lecture about my diet, I told her to park. Somehow I squeezed out of the car, but not without squishing my boobs against the door, glad the children in the neighboring car found that funny. Once inside the mall, I felt my heartbeat quicken. The crowds, the pushiness, the people in the middle of the hall who worked the kiosks and practically ran after you with hand cream and hairstylers. The mall did nothing to help my panic attacks and was one of the worst places for me, especially when my nerves were shot. My mother took no notice, as usual. She just ushered me into the Macy's women's department. I had it figured out, even before she started pulling various blazers and skirts. She wanted me to look more professional for my new position. That was fair enough, I suppose. I did need to amp up my wardrobe, and my band t-shirts weren't cutting it anymore, even if I paired them with a nice skirt. I just knew my mom would squeeze me into some very unflattering and un-Perry-like clothes. And I was right. 10 minutes passed, and I made it out of the changing room with just one new outfit that suited me and one hell of a lecture about my weight. "We could at least get you new shoes. Maybe some heels? You can't gain weight in your feet," she said brightly. And before she had time to insult me again, I was dragged in the direction of the shoe department. Don't get me wrong, I love shoes, but I love my kind of shoes. And my kind of shoes are the funky or comfy kind. The shoes my mom wanted me to wear would be better suited to someone else. Someone like Jen. The thought of her quickened my pulse. I think my mom could tell, because as the bored salesman shoved a pair of shoes back in the box, she said, "So, tell me about this man you were with. Dex? You mean the producer of the show?" I said, not wanting to go down this road with her. "He's really interesting." "You like him?" "No, Mom," I sighed and fingered the smooth patent finish of a pair of 4-inch pumps. "Does anyone ever listen to me?" "Pumpkin, you shouldn't let something like a girlfriend stand in your way," she said with a little too much conviction. I laughed. I couldn't help it. Even the salesman looked shocked at what she said, but he quickly hurried away before he could hear any more. "Mom," I managed to say, "that is terrible advice to give your daughter." She smiled at me, and for an instant, I felt like we were sharing our own private joke. "I'm not saying you should do anything. I'm just saying that sometimes life works in funny ways. When I was dating your father, there was a nice man who wanted me. He would send me flowers, ask me on dates when your father wasn't looking. I never ended up doing anything about it. I was loyal. But I often wonder what would have happened if I went for that other man. Ted was his name. Instead. Sure, your father might have been heartbroken, or at least his pride would have been lost, but he'd go on and find someone else. Ted was a very successful businessman. He went on to make millions with some sort of telephone company. My life might have been a lot better if I had ended up with him. You never know." This made my mind reel, never mind the pain shooting up from the balls of my feet as I attempted to stand in a pair of narrow-toed platforms. "Yeah, well, you wouldn't have had me or Ada if you went with this Ted dude," I admonished her while trying to keep my balance. She shrugged. "I guess. I'm just saying perhaps it's best to take a chance, that's all. You should take those to make your legs look skinniest." I looked down at the shoes. They didn't make me look anything except bow-legged. But I agreed for the sake of ending this horrible conversation. It's not that I thought my parents had the most perfect marriage, and I wouldn't even be surprised if they secretly yearned for different lives. But to hear your mother disclose that so glibly was disturbing, to say the least. But it wasn't over. Things kind of got worse at the till when she paid for the devil shoes. "Now, Perry, I hope this new advancement in your position means you'll think more about seriously getting your own place and moving out." "This too?" The salesman and I were able to exchange a look that said, "It's not over yet?" "Oh my God, Mom," I exhaled loudly. "Well, I'm just saying, you're old enough to be responsible and move out. Please don't think we want you to leave or anything, but with more responsibility comes more responsibility. And I'd really love to turn your bedroom into my own room." "What do you mean, your own room?" I eyed her suspiciously. She shrugged and took the bag from the clerk. He looked happy to be rid of us and relieved that he didn't have to go home with her, unlike me. "I don't know, Pumpkin. Sometimes you get to a certain age where you want your own room and your own place. Besides, your father snores. It would be nice to get a good night's sleep." I don't know exactly how long my parents have been married, but this was the first time I ever heard my mom complain about my dad snoring. I didn't like where this was going at all. As we left the mall and started our walk and the gray drizzled towards the car, our conversation drifted into other topics, such as the newest reality show she was hooked on. I pushed what she said out of my head as much as I could. Chapter 17. The rest of the week went quickly since I was training Melody easy and being trained by Frida to prepare for my new job not so easy. Not everything I learned was going to stay in my head, but I knew perfection wasn't going to be expected right off the bat on Monday. Melody learned quickly, as I thought she would. This allowed me to try and wrap my head around the new Excel spreadsheets that I had to get used to for the upcoming production schedule while she greeted clients and answered the phones. I was so zoned out in my Excel tornado, Excel was my nemesis, that I barely noticed when she handed me the phone.
"Perry, it's for you," Melody said cheerfully, nudging me in the arm until I looked up.
"Oh," I said distractedly, mind blown away by some formula that didn't add up. I took the phone and put it to my ear. Melody removed her headpiece.
"Perry speaking."
My voice didn't sound as friendly as it should have, but whatever, this wasn't my job anymore.
"Ah, hello, is this a Perry? Perry Palomino, yes?"
a man said in a high-pitched accent that was borderline ridiculous.
Yeah,
I replied, giving Melody a look. She raised her brows to say she had no idea who it was.
"Ah, Perry, you a ghost woman, yes? You go see big ghosts, yes?"
the man insisted. I paused, trying to figure out what was going on.
"Maybe."
"Yes, yes, you her. You the lady on the computer. You have ghosts show up and blow up lighthouses. You big star."
My heart stopped. I quickly peered down at the number on the call display. It was a Seattle area code. "Dex?" I asked, the hope in my voice clearly registering.
"Dex, he is handsome man, yes. That man, genius, big, sexy genius. He discover you, made you a big star."
"Dex," I repeated slowly. There was a pause, then the voice giggled high and shrill. I recognized that laugh anywhere. It was Dex. "I'm sorry to call you at work," he said, his regular low and smooth voice coming through the line and flooding my heart with warmth. "But it took me a couple of tries to realize you might not have your phone anymore."
"Oh, that's okay,"
I said brightly. The phone started to light up with another call. Melody moved to press the button, but I shooed her away. The other calls could wait. This is what I call the receptionist's prerogative.
"I'll try and keep this brief, as I'm sure you have to get back to answering other calls for more important people. By the way, how'd your meeting go?"
Good. Fantastic," I said, not wanting to outright talk about my new position in front of Melody. It seemed like it would be in bad taste.
"Do I need to speak in code? Did you get the job?"
"Yes to both," I smiled. Melody watched me inquisitively.
"Well, that's good news for you, right?"
he asked innocently.
"Of course."
He mused. The line went silent.
"What?"
I asked, feeling funny about his reaction.
"I need you to come up to Seattle on Friday afternoon,"
he stated in a very no-nonsense voice, as if I had no choice.
"What?"
I exclaimed. "I can't do that."
"You have to,"
he replied. I looked at Melody. She got the hint. She got out of her chair and whispered, "I'm gonna go use the bathroom." I mouthed thank you to her, then promptly sat down in her place. "What do you mean I have to?" I whispered violently into the mouthpiece.
"I've put the footage together. I've composed the music. The shit is fucking brilliant, Perry. At least I think so. Jimmy wants to meet with you on Friday, though, just to make sure."
"But what? Footage? So you were able to save it?"
"Well, I hate to borrow an old phrase from your favorite decade, but duh,"
he said sarcastically. I rolled my eyes, though there was no one to see it. "This is the first I've heard of it. I thought you were going to call me as soon as you knew what you had."
"No, I said I would call if I knew anything interesting, and Jimmy just told me he wants to see you Friday no matter what. I thought that was pretty interesting."
"Dex, I can't just go to Seattle on such short notice. I start my new position on Monday, and I still have to train the receptionist," I hissed.
"She sounded well-trained to me. A lot nicer than you, actually."
I swear I almost hung up the phone. I took a deep breath and hoped he would respond to reason. "Listen, Dex, I can't leave. Your Jimmy guy will understand. Maybe I could come on Saturday or next weekend," I said very slowly and calmly.
"Yeah, that's not gonna happen. It's now or never, do or don't, or die, depending on how dramatic you want to make this. Just call in sick."
I did feel sick now that all this was going on. I should have known this wouldn't be a simple situation. It sure as hell hadn't been simple so far.
"Oh, I don't know," I said wearily.
"Call in sick. Your receptionist will manage. She'll have to manage without you anyway, right?" Listen here, I will fly you up here. No cost to you. You'll meet with Jimmy. He'll be won over by your personality, I'm hoping. You'll sign some papers, we'll have ourselves some champagne, and everything will be right with the world.
That sounded all too easy. I sighed, unsure of what to say. It was another one of those moments where I knew my actions would determine a new branch in my life, another road to go down. Did I say yes, ditch work, and possibly damage my new job? Or did I say no, say goodbye to working with Dex and doing something truly interesting, albeit unconventional, with my life, and move forward down a more responsible path? Could I do both? Maybe. Can I call you back? I'm not really free to talk, I managed to say just as Melody came back into reception.
You can call me anytime, he said dryly, but I need to know your answer right now. I've got Jimmy right here in front of me, and he's starting to think I'm a bit of a liar.
You are a liar, I muttered and gave Melody an apologetic look. She eyed the blinking lines on the console but didn't say anything.
Yes or no, Dex said, impatience rising in his voice.
I could just see his dark brows furrowed, his forehead creased. I took in a deep breath and closed my eyes. There was no point trying to figure out what was right, no point in thinking. I said the first thing that came to my mind. Yes. I said yes.
Thanks, Perry, he said sincerely, gently, almost. I'll email you the flight details right now. I'll come get you at the airport and everything. The meeting will only take a couple of hours at the most, and then you'll be back on the plane home, easy as pie. You remember the pie analogy, don't you?
Yeah.
Good. See you soon, kiddo.
And then the line went dead. I exhaled and slowly hung up the phone. Melody gave me a perky smile. Man troubles? I smiled despite myself. I guess you could say that. The next day and a half was completely upside down for me. Dex emailed me my flight tickets, which meant that everything was set to go. The only thing I had to do was call in sick on Friday morning. I didn't actually think Frida would have a problem with it, meaning she might feel inconvenienced and perhaps a bit fearful that I may not come in on Monday, though I would assure her I would. But I didn't think she'd jump to the immediate conclusion that I was playing hooky. After all, the swine flu thing was still going around. No, the problem I knew I'd have was with my parents. How on earth was I going to tell them I was sick and then hop a plane to Seattle? I had a cold that only a Seattle doctor knew how to fix. Might as well tell them I was going to Seattle Grace Hospital to get checked up by Dr. McDreamy. I knew if I told my parents the truth, they would be so terribly disappointed in me. I could tell they were relieved when it seemed like this whole ghost show wasn't going anywhere. And I knew how happy they were when I got promoted. I couldn't bear to disappoint them after so many years of constantly letting them down. It got so bad that on Thursday night, I had to sequester Ada in my room and ask for her advice. I lay on my bed, my stuffed elephant squeezed between my arms, staring hopelessly at the ceiling. Ada sat at my desk watching me thoughtfully. It felt like a bizarro shrink and patient scenario. Well, I asked, frustrated at how silent she had been while I poured my heart out to her. Chill out, I'm thinking, she answered, put upon. Are you or are you humoring me? I'm humoring you, duh. You're the second person in 2 days to use that phrase, I pointed out. Just tell Mom and Dad you're going to work and tell your work that you're sick, she announced. Do you think I always go to school when I'm supposed to? Ada, I exclaimed, the big sister in me coming out. Whatever, you are a druggie, she said defensively. Please stop throwing that back in my face. No, you please stop acting like you give a shit. I'm fucking 15, Perry. Think I'm gonna listen to whatever sisterly advice you try and give me? Wake up and smell the apathy. Oh, jeez, how emo can you get? You wanted my advice, you got it. You think I'm gonna tell you what you want to hear? If you want to be all, like, smart and adult about this shit, then do the right thing. But if you want to do something fun and take a chance, then screw what anyone else thinks. Rock and roll, man! I laughed at that last bit and sat up. Ada had gotten out of her chair and was picking up my guitar. You never play anymore, she said wistfully. I've been busy, and I still suck. Dream big. Dream big. She strummed it absently, chords all wrong, but her words resonated in my head. I used to dream big. It seemed like somewhere along the way I had forgotten about that and gave up. Okay, I said, coming to a decision.
I'll tell Mom and Dad that I'm going to work. I'll take the bike to the airport and just hang out there for a few hours. Then I'll tell them that I'm going out after work or something so they won't worry when I come home late. I think you can be pretty smart when you want, Perry. You didn't need me to tell you all of that. She put the guitar down and brushed her long bangs out of her blackened eyes. Thanks, I told her. She smiled sheepishly. You only get one compliment from me every couple of months, okay?
Got it.
Good luck, was the last thing she said before leaving the room. I have no idea how I fell asleep that night. My nerves were buzzing and my thoughts were high, but soon enough, the sun came up. Chapter 18. I got on the airplane with my heart fluttering in my chest like some panicked bird and gave the flight attendant the biggest smile I could muster when I handed over my ticket. I felt like a very important person, even though that was not the case. Still, there was a sense of mystery and fugitiveness to my actions since everything I did was kind of a lie. I must admit, it was very exciting. I called Frida at 6:30 a.m. to add to the realism of my excuse. If there was anything I knew about calling in sick, it's that you rarely have the strength to call at the appropriate time. She did sound slightly suspicious, which made it hard to do the dance between sounding too sick to come, but not sounding so sick that it didn't seem like I would come in on Monday. In the end, though, there wasn't much she could do, and she told me to call her on Sunday night to confirm that I would be okay to work. My parents were a bit easier. I just got dressed and ready like I always did. I was jittery, though, and my excitement showed even before my morning coffee. While I grabbed my leftovers from the fridge, my mother asked if I was okay. Thankfully, Ada was there, and she switched the conversation over to her before I could say anything. I almost winked at her in thanks, but had my mom caught that, we would have both been toast. It was a short hop on a small plane before landing at the SeaTac airport. The flight was uneventful, but I couldn't stop fidgeting in my seat like a barrel of monkeys. By the time we landed and were coasting to the gate, the quiet old man next to me patted my hand and said, "It's okay, we're safe now." Oh, if only I knew that was true. When it was time to exit, I grabbed my purse and walked down the aisle to the door, brimming with excitement. I felt like a character in a romantic movie. Again, this was stupid, girly thinking on my part, but there was no way I could pretend I didn't feel that way. After giving the pilot an enthusiastic salute as I walked into the terminal, I saw Dex. I wish I could say that he was just a man, as I had told myself all week. But seeing him standing there by the gate, it just wasn't true. He was leaning casually against a supporting pole, a toothpick darting in and out of his mouth. His dark hair was spiked up at the front, and the scratch down his forehead had faded. It still added a little roughness to his face, which looked younger and fresher than ever. His eyes were bright and shining, and I could have sworn his eyelashes were longer or something, because he almost looked pretty. Even his Errol Flynn stash barely showed, and his goatee was groomed as clean as an early ski run. His attire was different, too. A white, long-sleeved dress shirt and black pants. He could have been a waiter if it wasn't for the oversized army green windbreaker he had on top. I can't lie. The sight of him made my heart turn into syrup, swirling around in slow motion in my chest. Our eyes interlocked, and as if I was in some hormonal tractor beam, I felt myself being drawn to him. Thank goodness the tractor beam had enough sense to stop as soon as I was within striking distance of him. "Hi," I said, my voice squeaking more than I would have liked. He took the toothpick out with one hand and flicked it on the floor in front of a woman walking by. She gave him a dirty look. He gave her a sleazy grin in return and wagged his eyebrows at her suggestively. Then he turned to me and grinned.
"You came."
He sounded surprised.
"Yep,"
I replied, adjusting the purse on my shoulder, a bit unsure if I should hug him or not.
"You're more foolish than I thought."
He reached out and smacked my arm.
"God bless the youth."
Before I could even process what he meant by that, he took his pocket watch out of his pant pocket and glanced at it.
"We better get going, hmm?"
And he was off like a shot down the terminal. I trotted after him, starting to wonder if I had made a mistake. I also found myself wishing his coat was a bit shorter so I could see his ass better. Yep, I was pretty done for at this point. The drive downtown was fairly long, with traffic jams and construction zones clogging up the I-5. During that time, I was filled in on what had come out of the footage.
"At first, I thought we were fucked because a lot of the shots were just black, with the occasional sound coming through. But then I realized if I could at least save the audio and then play them at other parts, then it would add to the whole ambiance. And then if I could get your narration at certain points, it would fill up the blank spots.
Watching Dex speak about the film made me realize how much he actually cared about the whole thing, and how he knew exactly what he was talking about. He could see the big picture, whereas I couldn't imagine how anything we shot would become remotely interesting. If I had the camera myself up in old Roddy's face, it would have been a different story. But Dex seemed so confident that he had something amazing on his hands, even if I didn't believe it myself. He must have seen the cynicism on my face, because he turned to me and said, "Believe me, it looks good. We've got a good thing going on here." One of those instances where I'm just going to have to trust you, right? "I would hope you'd always trust me," he answered rather seriously. I wasn't sure what to say to that, so I didn't say anything. I looked out the window. It's not that Dex wasn't trustworthy. He saved my life, in a way. But because he was so unpredictable, I had a hard time accepting everything he said. There was also the whole self-admitted liar bipolar thing, and the fact that I wanted nothing more than for him to pull the car over so I could climb on his lap and molest the crap out of him. Well, I knew from experience that you weren't supposed to trust the guys you thought were sexy as hell. Dark, brooding, and mysterious? Handle with care. And, of course, there was the term always, as if he knew for a fact we would be working together indefinitely. As much as I wanted to, the responsible adult side of me needed to know exactly what I was getting into. Would it interfere with my job? How much would I get paid, if anything? Basically, what was in it for me? The last thing I wanted was to be taken advantage of. I mulled these things over during the rest of the drive, and even until we were in an elevator going up one of Seattle's skyscrapers. I guess for a little internet company, they were actually doing quite well for themselves. We got off at the elevator and turned left at a sign that read Shownet. We paused in front of a French door made of pebbled glass. Dex reached for the handle and then stopped. He looked at me.
"You okay?"
I nodded. I was okay, though each step toward the door had me feeling more and more anxious until I was shaking in my boots. "Just a bit nervous," I admitted. "But I always get nervous. Always, no matter what."
"Let's hope he finds that as endearing as I do," Dex said, with his tone not as promising as I would have hoped.
We entered the room and said some polite introductions to their receptionist, Lee, who responded to Dex with all the sparkle of a Barbie doll, but whose eyes turned positively demonic as soon as she spoke to me, and I thought I was a bad receptionist. Sheesh. Then we went into a small but pleasantly attired boardroom. A fancy-looking espresso machine sat in the corner, which I eyed feverishly. Dex caught my stare.
"Do you want some?"
He was about to go to it when the door swung open and a slender, balding Korean man with hipster glasses stepped into the room. Dex promptly sat down in a chair and motioned for me to do the same. The bald man walked to the other side of the glass table, threw a binder down with a loud clank, and leaned across it, peering at me.
"Jimmy, this is Perry Palomino," Dex said quickly.
I was about to give Jimmy my hand, but he just nodded dismissively and sat in an overstuffed swivel chair. If he had a cat in his lap, he would have been the perfect arch-villain in a comic book film. I glanced over at Dex for support. He reached out under the table and squeezed my knee, slightly inappropriate but comforting nonetheless. "So, you're the one," Jimmy said slowly, his voice high and careful. "That's me," I agreed brightly, hoping I was projecting some kind of charm. "You know, I was going about my business, making some money." He started, taking off his glasses and rubbing his eyes. Dex and I waited patiently while he did this. He slipped his glasses back on his face and looked me straight in the eye. "And then you come out of nowhere." He left it at that.
"Should I say something? Should I apologize?"
I wasn't sure where this Jimmy fellow was going with all this, but he didn't seem like the easiest person to talk to. Dex turned to me.
"Jimmy just wants to make sure you're fully into this."
"Well, perhaps," I said as confidently as possible. "But I want to know exactly what I'm getting into. What are we talking about here?"
"Well, at least you seem smarter than you look," Jimmy sniffed.
I took offense to that, but didn't let it show. I felt Dex stiffen up beside me. Jimmy pulled some papers out of the binder and looked them over, but didn't hand them over to me.
"If I decide to do this, which is a huge if,
because even though I like what Dex has shown me, and I do think the man can make a pile of shit taste like fucking candy, I'm still not sold on you. But if I decide to give you both the go-ahead, I hope you realize this isn't going to make you famous and it isn't going to make you rich. All I want is to bring in enough advertisers to make ends meet and maybe give Dex a new fucking camera.
I looked over at Dex. He was embarrassed and looked down at his hands.
I make money, Jimmy continued, by keeping costs lower than they should be. For you, Miss Palomino, that means an hourly wage based on exactly how many hours you contribute to the project. That might mean a lot of money one week. It might mean shit all the next week. I'd suggest you keep your day job as a barista, or whatever the hell you do.
I'm a production coordinator at an advertising firm, I said proudly.
Oh, so you are smarter than you look. Well, that helps for something.
I couldn't help but narrow my eyes at him. I'd never been in the presence of someone who rubbed me quite the wrong way as this guy did.
Perry will decide whether she needs to keep a job on the side or not.
Dex spoke up for me.
Don't be a hero, Dex, Jimmy said dismissively.
He turned his beady eyes on me again.
Dex here tells me you have quite a natural affinity for sussing out these so-called ghostly situations.
I did? Jimmy continued.
But I think that's a load of horseshit. Do you think it matters to me whether you're the next fucking ghost whisperer or not?
I don't care.
But if you can sell it, and Dex has assured me you can, with your writing at least, then that's all I care about. You guys do the groundwork, you do the research, and I'll send you both to wherever you need to go in order to create a fucking good show.
Dex leaned forward in his seat and spoke to me.
I've already got a case down in Laredo, Texas, we could go investigate. Should be something really fantastic, mimic ghosts.
I didn't know what mimic ghosts were, but the idea of going to Texas was pretty cool. Jimmy looked unconvinced, though.
Now, the main problem I have with you, Perry, Jimmy said bluntly, is that while I think you can write a compelling story, and Dex says you're easy to work with, I just don't think you're attractive enough to be on the internet.
My face immediately flushed with sparking heat, and my jaw dropped a little bit. He continued,
It's not that you aren't pretty. You've got something there, but you've seen what we have on the other shows. Dex's gal Jennifer, well, her body, no offense, Dex, is what brings in the traffic and the dollars. Plus, we've got her friend on the side, and those two could vomit wine all day and people would still watch. I just don't see people watching a show with a bigger girl on it. Again, no offense, it's just the reality.
I felt like someone swiped at my guts with a ragged hook. This had to be the most humiliating thing I had ever been subjected to, and that said a lot. Coming from someone who was known as the Chubster in high school. I waited for the tears to flow, but I was in too much shock to react in any way. That didn't stop Dex, though. He suddenly got to his feet, his chair flew out from under him and wheeled backwards towards the wall. He slammed his hands down on the table with such force that I was afraid the glass was going to shatter. He leaned across until he was very close to Jimmy's worried face.
Do you ever get sick of being a complete asshole, Jimmy?
Dex growled, his voice scraping the bottom of the register, spitting with rawness.
She may not be a self-obsessed, stick-thin bimbo, but she's more than right for this job. You're right in that she's got something about her, and we have a right to share that with the world. This show is more than just stupid ghost stories. This show will go further into those mysteries than any show has gone before. It will bring that real back to reality programming. She's smart, she's funny, and she's not afraid to take risks, not to mention that she's beautiful, sexy, and charming. You know it, I know it, and soon everyone else will know it. The only person who doesn't know it is her because of archaic fuckheads like yourself telling her otherwise.
My mouth dropped open another inch. I couldn't believe what Dex had just said. It had to be the most wonderful thing anyone had ever said about me, and his words and passion melted me from the inside out. I felt the tears finally coming.
Are we really going to argue about her?
Jimmy said after a few beats, thumbing at me. Dex continued to stare at Jimmy, rage pulsing at the corners of his jaw. This was too much for me to handle. The tears started to flow. Even though they were tears of frustration and anger, I didn't know what to do. So I decided to leave. I got up quickly, squeaked out an excuse me, and bolted out of the room and the office before Jimmy, Dex, or the receptionist had a chance to say anything. I pushed the button for the elevator a few times before my vision was blurred by my tears. I decided the stairs might be the quickest way out. I got into the stairway and ran down. At first, I wasn't sure what I was running from. By the time I had gone down 10 flights and my knees were starting to hurt, I slowed my pace and started breathing in deeply. I probably shouldn't have run like that. I know it was totally unprofessional and made me look even worse, but what was the point in sticking around to be humiliated further? It's not like I was going to get a show anyway at this rate, no matter how hard Dex fought for me. The thought of what he said brought a sense of warmth into my aching, wheezing chest. I slowed down even more and sat down on one of the cold steps. The stairwell was empty, and I had another 30 floors to go down. I took in a few deep breaths and tried to run through what had happened. I had two feelings battling inside of me. One was that icky feeling you get when you know you've made an idiot of yourself. The other was a sense of unworthiness. Never in my whole life have I ever had someone put so much stock into me as a person and actually believe it. Or at least act like he believed it. I was a huge risk for him, and he seemed willing to jump with no rope or cord attached. It amazed me that Dex said all of that, and to his boss, no less. I'd be on my ass in a second if I ever said anything like that to Frida. And at that thought, I was shot with a third feeling. Guilt. The guilt of lying to my boss and putting my job on the line, all for nothing. I could see the shoes my mom had bought me, sitting proudly in their shoebox. I could have ruined everything for myself. What a mess, I said out loud, my voice echoing from the cement walls. I sat there for a few more minutes, trying to figure out my next course of action. I didn't know where Dex was, and I didn't have a phone, so I couldn't call him. But I did have money and a plane ticket. Getting a cab and heading back to the airport seemed like the smartest thing to do. Just go back home, try and buckle down, and make something good of my life and forget all of this ever happened. Not that it was going to be that easy. To just let go of all those hopes that this had given me. Hope, potential, dreams. I really thought this was my way out of an ordinary life. My promotion was great and all, but it was an ordinary job and still felt stifling. And when I thought about this opportunity, it just paled in comparison. This had been a chance to actually prove to everyone what exactly I was capable of. Even when I didn't believe anything was going to come of this, something at the back of my head and in the bottom of my heart was already fully invested. I sighed. I wiped away any makeup smudges under my eyes, brushed back my hair, and stood up. I'd probably end up dwelling on this all day regardless, but there was no point doing it in a cold stairwell in a giant Seattle office building. I made my way down the rest of the stairs and out of the lobby, walking quickly in case I saw someone I didn't want to see. Not that I thought Jimmy would be waiting to pounce on me and insult me further, but I was paranoid. Once outside, I scanned the street for cabs. It looked like there might be one across the street in front of a boutique hotel. I was heading for it, hoping no one else would take it, when I heard my name being called. It was Dex's voice. I didn't want to turn around. I wanted to be free of all this. I kept walking and ignored it. I didn't get very far. I heard footsteps behind me and my arm being grabbed. He stepped in front of me, panting slightly, a crazed look in his eyes. I looked down at his free hand. He had a pen and a stack of papers in it. "Perry," he said breathlessly, "why did you run?" I gave him a look. Was he serious? "I'm sure being humiliated is a normal thing for you," I sneered. He rolled his eyes. "Jimmy is Jimmy. Don't listen to him." "I don't, and it doesn't matter. He listens to me." He let go of my arm and placed the papers in one of my hands and the pen in the other. "Would you do me the honor of signing this contract?" "What?" I looked down at my hands. I didn't understand. "We've got the show, kiddo, if you still want it," he said, peering deep into my eyes. "How?" he said. He shook his head. "That's just Jimmy. Like I told you, he listens to me. He knows he would be stupid not to take a chance on this." Though I felt uncomfortable about all this, there was a tingling of excitement biting at my toes. "Dex," I said, looking down at the paper, but not really seeing it. "I don't want to do anything if you force someone." "I didn't," he exclaimed. "He likes the challenge as much as I do. Now what do you say? You know how I feel now." I looked up at him. "Did I?" He smiled at me, took the papers from my hand, and held them against his chest. He took my other hand and put the pen to the papers.
You're signing it on my heart. That's gotta say something, he said.
I took in a deep breath, not sure of how to feel or think. I know Dex wasn't talking about anything too deep, but the fact was he was still willing to take this chance on me and somehow convinced his boss to do the same. I felt uncomfortable, but a touch of excitement climbed through my body at an alarming rate.
We'll make a great team, I promise.
He grinned and tried to move my hand down to the signature area. I couldn't help but smile back. It was a nice little moment, standing on the side of a busy Seattle street with the contract to our future lying against his chest, the pen and the power in my own hand. I smiled even more until I thought my cheeks would burst. I still had to look over the contract and make sure I knew exactly what I was getting into. I knew I would probably have to work at the agency part-time in order to have enough time to film during the week. I knew that might mean I could lose my job, because I had no idea if they would let me work part-time. Therefore, I could be tossing away a perfectly acceptable future in advertising. It also meant disappointing my parents again, those damn shoes, and working with a man who I was falling for when he expressed no real interest in me and had a girlfriend, despite his apparent devotion to me in this project. Even though there were no guarantees of any success, I still signed my name, on his heart, no less. I knew it was the most important thing I had ever written. Dex laughed when I was done and patted me hard on the back.
You've made me a very happy man, kiddo, he said, folding the papers into his hand. Now, wait here while I run these up to him. I'll be quick.
He turned and sprinted toward the building, his hair flopping against his head with each stride. Now that I was alone again, it actually hit me. I was doing this. I was actually doing this. Things were never going to be the same again. I did a tiny Mary Tyler Moore jump in the street to the amusement of the passersby. At least they met me with smiles. Dex wasn't long, and within minutes he was back at my side, wiping his hands.
Done deal, he said. No turning back now.
I nodded, and we started off toward his car. We walked in silence, mostly due to the little conversations we were probably having in our heads at the same time. But before we got in, I grabbed his hand and stopped him. I wasn't sure what to say or how to say it. I licked my lips nervously and looked up into those brown eyes of his. They were almost unreadable, but I detected a current of worry behind them. I let go of his hand. Thank you. He pursed his lips and nodded.
You're welcome.
That was all we ever said about what had happened. During the ride back to the airport, we discussed the logistics of our future endeavors. The episode, which I quickly reviewed on his laptop in the car, was very well done and well edited. There wasn't much in the way of ghostly proof, but there was a frightening atmosphere to the whole show, and I knew that I could write the perfect piece to go with it. It would be the truth, of course, that I would put out there for anyone to believe. Dex said the episode would go live on a Sunday night in 2 weeks. He and I would then push hard for lots of exposure. I could use the existing YouTube videos and redirect people. I could use my sister's blog and even create my own separate dummy blog to increase more traffic. Dex said Jimmy was pretty good at getting advertising, which is something I could have done, considering my day job, but I wanted to keep that as separate from this as possible. In 3 weeks, we would fly down to Texas for the weekend and shoot our next episode. We decided the best thing for me to do would be to request that I work at the agency Tuesdays through Thursdays so I could have Fridays through Mondays to travel, shoot, and write. It was a gamble for me to think that work was going to let me do this, and even more imposing than that, it meant I was going to have no life for the foreseeable future. But what life did I really have before, anyway? As anxious and nervous as I was about the new path I was about to head down, a tiny part of me knew everything was going to be okay. It felt right. When we got to the airport, Dex pulled the car up to the terminal, got out, and opened the door for me. Thanks, I said, feeling charmed and connected.
I've got a thank you present for you, he said with a jovial glint in his eyes. Close your eyes.
The childish part of my brain hoped that maybe it was something as simple and romantic as a kiss. I closed them. He placed something cold in my hands. I opened my eyes to see a shiny new iPhone sitting in them. What? I beamed. You didn't have to.
I kinda did. And I kinda wanted to. Now you can return my crazy texts at all hours of the night,
He winked. It's more for my pleasure than for yours.
I squeezed the phone in my hand and put my arms out to hug him. He embraced me wholeheartedly. Until his own phone started to ring. He broke away and looked at it. I could see on the screen it was Jennifer.
Sorry, I have to take this, he said apologetically to me and patted me hard on the shoulder. Have a safe flight. I'll call you soon.
I nodded awkwardly as he put the phone to his ear and said,
Hey, babe.
He talked to her, sincerely engrossed in the conversation. I turned around, feeling a bit stupid, and walked away toward the ticket agent. I looked behind at him, hoping to catch him watching me. Instead, he was still talking and walking back to his car, his lithe figure cutting through the crowd. I felt pretty small as I walked to my gate and waited for the plane to arrive, but somehow pushed those thoughts out of my head. If I could just get over these feelings that I had for him, then I would be okay. After all, it was just a stupid girl crush that I had. What was really important was the fact that I was about to embark on a journey unlike any I'd ever been on before. I looked around the busy gate area at the nameless people sitting about and decided I should probably use the bathroom before I got on the plane. Though it was a short flight, I didn't have an aisle seat and I hated having to climb over people just because I had to pee. I walked down the hall, past the gift shops, bars, and a few more gates before I found the restroom. It was surprisingly empty, which was a nice change from what airport bathrooms usually look like. There was only one woman in a stall down near the end. I noticed her red patent Mary Janes and old lady stockings. I went into the nearest stall to the front. I hung my bag up on the sturdy coat hook, noting how damp the ground looked, and proceeded to sit down. As I did so, I heard the stall door at the end open and the woman slowly walk out. I didn't hear her flush, which was pretty gross, but expected in public washrooms. I swear, women were just as bad as men in these scenarios. It must have been some sort of internal rebellion mechanism, like, I don't live here, so I don't have to clean. Instead, I'll act like a fucking monkey. As I was thinking that, I noticed how precise the woman's footsteps were as she walked down the aisle toward me and the sinks. Heel, toe, heel, toe, heel, toe. It was slow enough to be creepy, and creepy enough that I had too much stage fright to even go. I just sat there holding my breath and waiting for her to walk past. But she didn't. Heel, toe. Heel, toe. And then it stopped somewhere outside my stall. Heel, toe. Heel, toe. It was like she was walking toward me. What the fuck? Heel, toe. And then it stopped, just as the round toes of the red Mary Janes were visible beneath my stall door, facing directly towards me. This crazy bitch was standing right outside my fucking door. I didn't know what to say or do. I didn't want to move, but I was on the fucking toilet seat. This was the most vulnerable position ever. I kept my eyes on the toes, thinking at some point they'd move, or maybe the woman would say something. But neither of those things happened. There was a large enough crack between the stall doors, though, usually the bane of every public washroom. I slowly moved my head over so that I was looking through the crack. Maybe I could get an idea of what she was doing. And through the crack, I saw an eye. A heavily made-up, aging eye staring right back at me, face pressed up to the door. I screamed. I couldn't help it. I screamed and jumped off of the toilet, yanking up my pants far enough and flung myself out of the bathroom stall, fully ready to confront whoever the fuck was out there. But as I stumbled out of the stall, the door banging loudly, I didn't see anyone. There was no one there. I was alone in the washroom, and the woman at the end of the aisle was gone. I put my hand to my neck to feel how fast my pulse was racing. I closed my eyes and took in a few deep breaths. After counting to 10, I opened them, expecting the worst. I was still alone in the bathroom, my bag hanging on the door, which slowly moved back and forth. I grabbed it off the hook and hustled myself over to the sink. I could deal with peeing on the plane. At least I knew I wouldn't be alone there. I placed the bag on the part of the counter that wasn't wet and quickly splashed cold water on my face, avoiding my eye makeup. I looked up in the mirror and saw nothing but my reflection. I turned for the paper towels. Creepy clown lady was standing there beside the dispenser. I screamed again, but it was caught in my throat and came out as a breathless gurgle.
It was her, as clear as day. Her wrinkled, pancaked face and violet-tinted coif. The bizarre taffeta gown with sewn-on pom-poms. Her stocking legs and red vintage shoes. She kept her glassy cataract eyes on me, almost willing me to calm down and stop screaming, as silently as I was trying. I don't know how long we stood there, just eyeing each other, only a few feet apart. But at some point I found strength returning to my throat, a life force rushing around my heart. "Who the hell are you?" I yelled at her. She didn't say anything. Her expression didn't change. She kept staring at me with her knowing eyes that were vaguely inquisitive and strangely patient. I wasn't even afraid at this point. I just wanted to know what the fuck was going on. I took a tentative step toward her. "Please tell me, who are you?" She smiled slowly. Her mouth spread, her yellow teeth showed, and the bad lipstick job became more glaring. As before, her eyes never smiled along with it. Whatever I had just said about not being afraid, forget it. I was very afraid. "You're just starting," the woman said with her slight accent. Her voice sounded disembodied. I was immediately reminded of a scene with Robert Blake in Lost Highway. "You need to keep going," she continued. "Who are you?" I repeated. "You need each other. You need to set this right."
"Set what right?" I asked. What are you talking about? We did set it right."
She shook her head very slowly. As she did, flakes of makeup fell off her face and flittered to the ground like pixie dust. I watched this, dumbfounded.
"It's not over yet. You and X need each other. We need you. It's not over yet."
I wanted to strangle her, whoever she was.
"Why? Why?" I asked frantically. "Please, just tell me why so I can know."
"You'll find out. It's not over yet. You're just discovering. You're just starting."
"You keep saying that. What do you mean I'm just starting?" I yelled at her just as I heard the bathroom door close.
I turned to see a businesswoman walk in, wheeling a carry-on behind her. She gave me a concerned look and walked past us down the aisle. I followed her walk and saw her give me one last fearful look before she walked into a stall. I looked back at creepy clown lady, but she was gone. I quickly spun around, and after seeing no one, I picked up my bag and ran out the door and into the terminal. It was full of passengers going to and fro. The lady had vanished. And then my flight was boarding. I had no choice but to scuttle back to my gate and slink on board as the guilty party who was holding up everyone else. It was only till I sat myself down in my seat after squeezing past the angry fat man on the aisle that I had a chance to mull over what had happened. The lady had been there. She had spoken to me. I interacted with her. But where did she come from, and what did she want? I couldn't have seen her. My imagination was good, but it wasn't that good. I had to keep going. I was just getting started. And most intriguing of all, Dex and I needed each other. What could Dex ever need me for? I was pondering that as the plane pulled away from the gate. All of the feelings of excitement I had earlier about the show, about my future, were now compounded with an increasing sense of urgency and trepidation. I had so many questions now that needed to be answered, and quickly. To get a handle on my thoughts, I looked out the window at the sunshine that was coming through the dark afternoon clouds. And as if fate knew exactly what I was thinking, I caught a glimpse of a figure standing by one of the windows. It was Dex, waving goodbye. This concludes Dark House by Karina Halley, narrated by Joe Raylan. Copyright 2011 by Karina Halley. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Karina Halley, care of the Waxman Level Literary Agency, and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.